Hello and welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian, and in today's show, we are joined by two very special guests. They are the hosts of the Girl That's Scary podcast. Girls, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Yes.
Hey, it's Cat Daddy. What's poppin', y'all?
Yeah, and Jazz, the 40-ounce connoisseur. We're here from Girl That's Scary.
Yes.
And we are American-based. If you can't tell by the accent, I'm Southern.
Sorry, I'm just hanging. But we're from different points on the map, and we're just hanging out, and we're into that spooky shit, and we're so excited to be here.
Yeah,
we're very excited to have you on. We will chat with you guys in just a little minute, but before we do that, just to remind everyone, this is episode number 54, and in today's show we are going to be discussing a classic movie. It is the 1987 film A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yes. Now,
don't forget, you can find this show in a variety of places. We are available on all major podcasting platforms. You can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, and Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast. Don't forget, you can now check out our very own merch store. Just go to TeePublic, that's TEEPublic, and search for the Behind the Screams Podcast. We've got some cool designs up there, so you can get yourself something nice. So yeah, please go and check that out. Rate and review us on iTunes. We would really be thankful for your support. So, yes, we have the wonderful hosts from the Girl That's Scary podcast. So, would you like to just tell our listeners maybe a little bit about your podcast?
Cool. All right. So, of course, we are a horror sci-fi podcast. We review movies, shows, and we talk about, it's kind of a different setup than a lot of the podcasts you may hear, where we like, hey, we're going to talk about all the horror films you know about that include aliens, or all the ones that include demon possession. We round them up and talk about them and talk about our favorites or ones we hate very much, you know, every once in a while, you know, pull them out of there. But we like discuss horror, and, you know, it's a different perspective because, of course, you know, we are women and we are also Black women. You know, and we've been watching horror since, for the last, what, 2-3 decades?
Since day one.
Yeah. I started watching horror before I went to school. So, I'm
mom. How old were you when you saw your first horror movie then? Because I was 6 years old when I saw my first one. And my parents subjected me to Scream.
Yeah. Wow! Great! I went to the theater to see Scream. And I was also 6. I went to the theater.
You went to the theater at 6 to see Scream?
Yes!
That's crazy.
It is.
I honestly can't remember an age. I just remember being young and my mama not letting me watch Beavis and Butthead, but I was allowed to watch Tales from the Crypt. So nothing makes sense. But what was really cool, a cool thing that happened over the weekend, speaking of people being age 6, my niece, she hung out with me for the first time for real since coronavirus came through and beat everybody's ass. And she had told me, we went to Target. I was like one of those like throw it in the bag type deals.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that's Chucky. I'm like, what? So she like goes, proceeds to tell me how she knows about Chucky. And she just turned 6. So now that I know that my niece is a Chucky fan, although she recognizes Chucky is a bad guy, she also knows about Freddy. So,
oh, yeah. Awesome.
So it won't be long before she's on the show then.
Yeah, we're just passing the torch at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah. No, she put the glove on. We have a Freddy glove. And she was like, ha ha ha, I'm going to slash you. And I was like, ha ha ha. I was so like, fun. Do you know whose glove that is? And she was like, it's the man that slashes people. And I'm like, I had to explain to her. I did explain who Freddy was. I was like, you need to know. It's important.
That's so funny because it's my nephew's 11th birthday today, and he got his very first Freddy glove. So I was so proud.
Oh, that's so nice.
Happy birthday. Your nephew.
Did you get a lot of pictures? I'm getting teary-eyed over here.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll send you all the pictures.
Yes. Oh. Cat gets very emotional, but, you know, happy things make her very emotional.
She told me to buy the Chucky doll at Target and was like, I think you should get the It doll, too. I know about Pennywise. That's the creepy guy with the balloons. I said, oh, my God, I'm going to vomit.
That's so awesome. But, yeah, I think that's probably one of the things I really love about your podcast as well, is that unlike this show here, where we just take a single movie, although we've started doing a couple other things, you know, you take a whole genre or a whole subgenre of horror and you just chat about all your favorites and least favorites and things like that. And I really love that. It's totally fresh. You know, it's not something you see so often. So many podcasts are just like this one, where, you know, they just pick a movie and just take it apart. So I really do love that about your podcast.
But I like your podcast. Wait, no. Okay, so yes, thank you so much. We love you, but no. A good time, and honestly, we've been like, I'm gonna be honest with you, I personally
was very lurie, still kind of lurie, about listening to other people's podcasts full time, because I don't want to accidentally be influenced by other people's thoughts or whatever. Still, like, completely, like, fuck with y'all, like, I follow you, you know, chop up with you on different platforms, mm-hmm. but, like, in terms of, like, views, you know, when you, like, watch something in terms mm-hmm. of a conversation. But I am thoroughly entertained by yours. There's a couple others I really bang with, but I have a good time. I feel like it doesn't matter if I've seen this movie 1,000 times. I feel like I'm having a discussion with someone who has a refreshing point of view, and that's tight.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. It was, when I first started doing this, it was one of the things I was, like, actively trying to avoid doing was listening to other podcasts, especially about the movies I was about to talk about, because of that very thing, because I didn't want to get influenced and things like that. And yeah, it probably has happened a few times over some of our old episodes where I've maybe said something or brought up a point that I wouldn't have brought up until I'd listened to someone else's podcast. And I always felt a bit bad. I was like, oh, I've kind of just stolen their thing, but... Oh, it's done now, so, but yeah, like, now, I think, now that I've done it for a while, because, I mean, we've now been doing this for about 8 or 9 months now, so this is episode, I think, 50, I can't remember what it said, 54, so I've kind of, like, practiced enough now that I can listen to other podcasts and not really get too influenced in what I'm going to speak and say about the topics we cover. But yeah, I think especially for like starting out people, that's something that they maybe want to avoid doing. But obviously I still support other podcasts. Mm-hmm. But there's a number of ways that people can do that as well. But awesome. Okay, so we always ask this question to any guests that we have on, because we like to put them on the spot a little bit. So what is your favorite horror movie of all time?
Shit. Wow. Okay. So of all time, I'm going to go with the horror movie that sticks to me, like, as my childhood, and kind of, because I'm a 90s baby, you know, I'll be 30 soon. Yeah. Really, like, in, like, 2 weeks, I'm going to be 30. And Child's Play 2 is one of my favorite horror movies of all time, because I love the Child's Play series, because literally, it's something that I grew up with. And it was scary as hell, because I was a small child. Right. Me and Chucky were the same size. Fuck him. And he was in my nightmares, and he was fucking me up in my dreams, and I was not happy about it, but I loved the movies. But that second movie where he turned into a fucking blob at the end, that's my favorite. And it explodes. It's fucking awesome. And I will watch that movie any time of the day. It could be 4 o'clock in the morning, and Child's Play 2 is on. I'm like, let me just turn this on. Click. Yes.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Mine is Night of the Living Dead, the OG Jane.
Nice.
I am a huge fan of black and white horror. Like, Jazz is, I know you've listened to our episodes, but I if you want to check for someone who has an extensive amount and still growing amount of, like, black and white horror, it's me. Yes. And if I don't, I can direct you in the way to go. Like, I love it. I've been watching horror since I don't know what age, and this is one of the first movies I ever saw. And I have, my parents are a little bit older, like, I'm a little bit older than Jazz. So not only was George Romero, rest in peace to the God, really showing the fuck out on a very limited budget, the story was captivating. I have never seen a black man own the room in a black and white horror film, and it wasn't like some, I don't know, like,
it wasn't
some
voodoo, it wasn't
magical. Yeah, it wasn't like a slave character. It wasn't like, he wasn't just a day player. Like, he really, and it didn't even start off that way. I generally enjoy all the characters, but, like, the movie itself was powerful. It was enjoyable, and I fucking love zombies, so
That's such an awesome movie, and like you say, it was so trendsetting for having black characters on screen as well, in the main role as well, like, not just as a side role, or like you say, being portrayed but through voodoo or slavery or anything like that. Yeah, it was so ahead of its time. Like, it was just an amazing film. So yeah, those are both great picks. No surprise to anyone who listens to the show, my favorite, I'm a bit of a generic horror fan here, because mine's is the OG 78 Halloween.
You know what? That's a close second, and I understand. So I good. Definitely understand. It's so good. It's good.
I just love Michael Myers. I used to sit and watch all the one. Like, I'm also a 90s child. I think your birthday's maybe like a week before my one, because my birthday's coming up in 3 weeks, and I'll be 29. Oh,
is it Leo season?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Is this
Todd
Linka?
Yes, it is.
So yeah, I just remember, like, in my childhood years, I just used to sit and watch all the Michael Myers films, all the Halloween films, just back to back, and I was never at any point actually scared of them, because I just loved Michael Myers. Like, I don't know, like, I always root for the bad guy anyway. So maybe I'm just a bit fucked up like that.
Hey, this is a safe space. We're on your spot, and we're like, no, this is a safe space.
We're all the same way, and also the theme, the music for
the fucked up character.
Wow, he's great. The music's great. He's iconic. He's a shape. He's just slinking in the shadow.
His little mask was nappy in these last couple movies, though. But, you know, it was shaky looking, but it's okay. He's getting better, though.
Okay. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely understand that things like Halloween Resurrection is complete trash, but I still love it. Who doesn't want to see Busta Rhymes' roundhouse kick Michael Myers out a window?
It was amazing.
I honestly would love to see the scene on repeat.
I will watch it all the time. It's not a good movie, but it's a good movie. Like, it's good to watch. It's fun to watch. Yeah. That shit is fun to watch. It's all a good time.
Awesome. Okay, so what do you guys have coming up? What's up next on your show? Like, what do you have coming out soon?
Of course, we have new episodes every Thursday coming up. We have on the lookout. Spoiler alert! Okay. We'll be talking about some grindhouse flicks.
Oh, I'm excited.
We'll be talking about one of my favorites, Tales from the Hood.
You know what I'm excited about? Something we haven't recorded yet and haven't talked about yet: our Stephen King conversation.
Yes, we will be about Stephen King. We are okay. I got the It audiobook. I've read Carrie. I'm reading Salem's Lot. Kat's reading If It Bleeds.
Yeah, I just started that. I'm enjoying it.
You know, we're linking it up. We're collecting our data. But I have thoughts. I love Stephen King, but I also have a lot of thoughts.
Do you know of that Facebook situation? I don't know if you're still plugged into Facebook, because Facebook is the devil. So do you know of, like, Red Table Talk by Jada Pinkett, Will Smith's wife? Okay, great. So I really feel like we, Girl That's Scary, Jazz and I, we really want Stephen King to come to the table. And that's just the preview we're going to give you. Like, we need him to sit down with us, because I have questions.
I'm going to read back some of your script to you. I'm going to read back in your books. Because
there's my glasses on.
There's a lot of hard R. I got called.
I felt attacked.
I got called so many things, because I'm listening to it via audiobook, what made it even worse. So it's this white man saying these things, and I'm like, oh my God, he is yelling this at me. What?
Listen.
Did you have to make it like this?
I called my mom, like, legit, after I finished, what was that? I think it was after I finished Salem's Lot. Uh-huh. I called my mama, and I was like, girl, because my mother's a huge Stephen King fan, like, she read all the books. I just gave her a new 2-3 books for Christmas, just because I knew she didn't have it. And I called her, I was like, girl, how was you reading these books?
Like, how? You just skip past it.
But that's okay. We'll talk about it.
It hits different. I'm still a huge fan, because I love these stories.
But my chest is hurting, because I can clearly see the view was not for me.
Yeah, it hurts. It hurts. But we'll talk about it after I collect all this data by reading all the books.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I absolutely cannot wait for that to come out, because I will be listening as soon as that gets released, because that sounds great. So, but yeah, before we move on, do you just want to tell the listeners, where can they find you guys, and where can they find, like, all that scary podcast?
All right. So you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Girl That's Scary, all one word. We also have a website that's www.girlthatscary.com. Mm-hmm. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify.
SoundCloud.
Stitcher, everything. I think.
Bleaker.
Yeah.
Girl, if most likely it exists, we got it. Like,
yeah.
We're everywhere. We're everywhere where you need to be.
Yeah, but honestly, if you pull up to the website, you'll definitely find an array of places where you can find us. But I, Jazz, run the Twitter. Usually I'm on the Twitter. I mean, sometimes we switch, but usually I'm on the Twitter, especially if it's like 5 o'clock in the morning.
And I'm on the Instagram. It's 5 o'clock.
Just sometimes at 5 o'clock in the morning, it's me watching Sharknado or something at 5 o'clock in the morning. Like, what's going on here? Let me hit play. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so yeah, everyone, go check out the Girl That's Scary podcast. But let's get into our first segment of the night, and we're going to be talking about some of our listeners' unpopular opinions.
These are your unpopular opinions.
So we have two this week, and they're both from the same Twitter account. So basically what we do is I usually put a call out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever we're on. I'll put a call out for you guys, the listeners, to let us know some of your most controversial, your most unpopular horror opinions. We then discuss it on the show. Normally we discuss it and then we decide whether we agree or disagree with you and whether or not we think it's an unpopular opinion at all. Because a lot of the times the ones we get sent in aren't actually that big an unpopular opinion and are probably a lot more common than they think. However, I feel like both this week's going to be very unpopular. So both come from the same Twitter account this week. They both come from the Wincing Horror Reviews Twitter account. First up, and they're going to talk about the Alien franchise first. So first up, they said that Aliens is the worst movie in the franchise, mainly down to Cameron's heavy-handed direction and lack of ideas. Even if he wanted to take something beautiful and run with it, it needs more than cliches and bullet counts. And he feels like Covenant is Ridley Scott's This Is How It's Done, You Idiot movie. So what do you guys think? Is Aliens the worst movie in the franchise?
Hell no! Okay.
Let you handle that.
Let me move my bang. Okay, so first of all right. Now, what I will say is, to be fair, the Alien Covenant I have not seen.
Right.
So I can't, you know, look at that and compare the two. So they have that. But Aliens fucking slaps. Like, what I will say is a very different movie. Alien is suspenseful,
yeah,
horror, straight up. You know, I get it. Aliens is a little more action. You know, and okay. I'm like, if you're not looking for, you're like, it's the same kind of story, but like, okay, we flip it to action. We're shooting the aliens. We got shotguns and shit. We're fucking shit up. It's a different kind of movie. I wouldn't say it's the worst in the franchise, like, because I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't think, but if you are expecting straight up horror, like what you got with Alien,
yeah,
I can see how you would feel that way about Alien. I could see that. But, and then also they do the same shit where they don't listen to fucking Sigourney Weaver. Like, god damn it. Like, she went through the shit the first time. Y'all need to be kissing her damn feet. Whatever she say is the truth. Like, what the hell? So I can see how that can be frustrating. But I fucking like Aliens. Like, I enjoyed that movie. It was good, to be honest with me. Like, yeah.
I completely agree with you. Like, I get it. I get what you're saying there as well. Like, if you love Alien and that's what you're expecting from the rest of the franchise, then I can see why Aliens might have been a little bit of a disappointment to you. But, I mean, Aliens is one of the greatest horror movies. No, it's not. Aliens is one of the greatest action movies of all time. Sigourney Weaver is such a badass in it. She's just fantastic. And it still has all those key elements that made Alien so great as well. Yeah, I mean, it's not quite as suspenseful. But you've also got like Bill Paxton in there, who's being just fantastic. The xenomorphs are just this absolute unstoppable force, and yeah, no, I absolutely love Aliens, and I have seen Covenant, and Aliens is far superior to Covenant. So, I completely disagree with the Wincing Horror Reviews Twitter feed. But
I'm gonna see it. I'm gonna watch it.
That's okay. I'm gonna sit through all of them because I can't. I'm gonna honestly admit, I know I'm about to be burning the stake. That's okay. I'll die on this hill. I have not seen all the Alien movies, and not because they're bad movies, but because extraterrestrial things, you know, to Jazz knows this, but I don't know if you know Ian and other people, but extraterrestrial things and a lot of supernatural stuff, there's only so much I can take, especially with Aliens, because I feel like I'm getting, like, at a certain point, it leaves horror. It's either 100% sci-fi or action.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
all right. You don't really like sci-fi
action. I ain't really trying to see these aliens beast in my ass all the time. Like, I really just...
That's exactly what I signed up for.
So, but I do want to watch all of them. I did thoroughly enjoy the first movie. I saw bits and pieces of the second. So I definitely want to see how the story ends.
Yeah. I love Alien.
I mean, I love Alien and Aliens. Alien 3 is all right. I don't particularly rate Alien Resurrection. Prometheus and Covenant just aren't. They're okay, like, but I think the franchise really peaks with the first two anyway. But let's move on, because we've got another opinion to get. Now, this one's maybe a little bit more apt for what we're discussing in today's show. So again, it's Wincing Horror Reviews, and they say this: Wes Craven is overrated. The Scream and Elm Street series were poor, with Freddy's potential lost on crap scripts. He gets major props for reinventing horror, but it's so busy patting itself on the back, it neglected the point of the genre.
Okay, so I know you said we could just be ourselves, and I'm so sorry, but somebody's smoking dicks. I don't know what's going on. What? Wes Craven is overrated, girl. What? Like, this is not a Wes Craven stan account, but I genuinely, like, to say that the Scream series is overrated, you're wildin'.
Yeah.
You're wild.
But also, you're maybe for the move. There are people who don't, like, there are some people who really don't fuck with meta horror at all.
Okay, I mean,
he
kind
of ushered that in with Scream.
That's your personal opinion. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, but even with...
They also said that the Elm Street series was overrated, and that's not particularly meta.
They smoke dicks.
That is so fucking unique. Someone, you go to sleep and there's a fucking dream demon with fucking razor fingers, needle, well, fucking
this
blade.
This is going to even write this. They know them.
You know what?
I just
don't
think this person really loves horror that much, to be honest.
But like I said, you have to have a certain, like, taste for certain things, so I get it. But...
Nah, taste aside, like, A Nightmare on Elm Street is just the story itself. The background story, like, no, that's a good ass story. Just story writing, not how it portrayed on TV, not none of that shit. Just the story itself. A man was wilding the fuck out, and then the people burnt him up, and now he's seeking revenge for his bullshit. Wow, I would love to see that. Even if you didn't love the scene, dreams. It makes sense.
I think as well. I think even if you don't love, like, the franchise that much, even if it's, like, not really your thing as well, you can still have that level of an appreciation for what it's done for horror or for how big a fan base it's got. Like, don't get me wrong, like, Scream's not, like, necessarily my favorite franchise. I watch them, I like them, but I can appreciate, like, what it did for horror and how meta it is, and, you know, we're at a... what it spawned in terms of all those cheap 90s knockoffs and things like that, you know? So I think sometimes you can have an opinion that maybe you don't like something as much as the general consensus, but mm-hmm. you still need to have that appreciation for it as well.
Both can exist.
Yeah.
And right now this person's wild, and I'm so sorry.
But I can definitely understand them not, because like I said, you know, of course Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream are classics, and they're definitely
totally
praised.
Absolutely.
They're praised. They're without top. Top flight horror. Everybody's gonna suggest those. So if they didn't, they watch it and like, I don't understand why you.
But they gave you what a lot of the shit that you feel in now. Like, if they did not do what that had to be done, you wouldn't be looking at this.
They opened doors.
Honestly, just recognize greatness when they walk in the room. That's really what it is.
No, I completely agree with you guys. I would just like to remind, before we move on, that all the opinions that we do share on our unpopular opinion segment are just that. They are just opinions. So these people are imperfectly entitled to their opinions, but we, in this instance, heavily disagree with the two opinions that have just been shared. But, guys, are you ready to talk about the movie?
I'm so excited.
Okay, so, and we are talking about A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
This is your spoiler alert.
Movie was released in 1987, directed by Chuck Russell, stars Heather Langenkamp, Robert Englund, and Craig Wasson. Here is the IMDb plot. Picking up 6 years after the original Nightmare, Nancy has grown up and became a psychiatrist specializing in dream therapy. She meets a group of children at a local hospital facing Freddy Krueger. the same demon she once encountered in her sleep. One of them is Kristen, who has the power to draw other people into her dreams. Working with other doctors assigned to the case, Nancy helps the kid realize their special abilities within the nightmare world. When Freddy captures one of her charges, she leads a rescue attempt into Krueger's domain in hopes of putting his spirit to rest once and for all. So a couple of questions before we like really get into the nitty-gritty with this film. In terms of like the franchise in total, where does Dream Warriors land for you? Like, is it one of the best ones for you? Is it one of the worst ones? Is it in the middle?
This is the best sequel I've seen in my entire life. I'm also biased because this is one of my favorite. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. So, Dream Warriors. I'm here.
Well, I don't hold it as like the second best as Kat does. I still give it like top three or four, because of course the first one I like, but I really also like Wes Craven's New Nightmare very much. I really like that film, so I kind of put that one in between the Dream Warriors, but Dream Warriors definitely slaps. But then there's another one I can't think of which, because I've seen all the Freddy movies more than once. They just come on TV and shit, like the one where they turn the girl who's in the cockroach thing and she turns to a roach. And
oh, girl, that's the fourth one.
Yeah, the next one. I'm like, they have some fucked up kills. I feel like the eardrum bursting open is that one too. Like, ooh, there's some
Dream Warriors
kills.
That girl
so,
in
yeah,
the story.
I'll give it three or four. It's definitely not the worst. It's definitely awesome in its own right. There's parts that I like. There's parts that I don't like. But it's good. And I like the practical effects very fucking much.
Awesome, that's cool. So we all have slightly different opinions, because in my opinion, this is the best Nightmare on Elm Street movie. I think this surpasses even the original. Don't get me wrong, I love the original. But for me, this movie is really where Freddy just takes off into like that elite dimension of horror villains. Like, he has got the one-liners, he is funny, he is scary, he just has everything nailed down perfectly in this movie.
I want you to know that Kathleen is crying.
Well, crying.
Yes, you are. Anyway, she does this often. She's okay. She loves this movie. So. She's very happy that you feel this way about this film. Like, yes, girl. But we all like. In all honesty, we all have a positive view of Dream Warriors.
It's so good.
And me and Kat watched it this morning over like breakfast and wine.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk, since you've been singing it, let's talk about the soundtrack.
Yes, let's do it.
Because is this not just the greatest song in a horror movie ever?
Yeah, and it's built for the fucking
without
song.
A doubt.
Like,
it's good. It's just some old school.
Honestly, I'm about to go buy it on iTunes right now, because I know I don't own it, and I'm going to keep playing it because I've been singing it since forever. Let's keep going.
I mean, Dream Warriors and Into the Fire, which is obviously played at the start of the film, is the only two songs I know by Dawkins. I'm not aware of any of their other material. They've never made it, I don't think, into the UK anyway. So I only know them through the two songs they play in this film. But I can imagine the rest of their shit, if it's anything as good as this, is sensational.
Yes, these songs are top notch. What I will give this, we both like music, but Kat likes music and movies and musicals as a whole way more than I do. So she loves this, and I feel like these songs are great. And they fall like right under the Freddy Nightmare, because Freddy Nightmare gives me creeps. Like, ooh, bitch, that
listen,
nothing
it gives
crazy.
You the drama. You know, you had that like 80s hair band shit. Everybody's wildin'. Everyone looks good. And it just gives you the over the topness that was the 80s, early 90s.
Magenta haze over everything with guitars.
I promise you, I'm not that old. But as an 80s myself, like, even if you don't if you vaguely remember it, you know you love the, I love the 80s, the show on VH1. It gives you that over-the-topness, and this was given it to us, and plus Freddie was that girl. So
there was definitely some punk look.
Although Freddie's trash.
Yeah, it's very glam rock, and I live for it.
Yeah.
Awesome. What I also like, speaking about the soundtrack, if we move away from Dawkins slightly, because I don't know if you guys remember, in Freddy's Revenge, in A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, the sort of soundtrack for the film wasn't the same from the original Nightmare on Elm Street, and they brought that back, and they told you they were bringing that back instantly by having those creepy little girls singing Freddy's nursery rhyme. which they didn't have in the second movie at all.
Right.
So yeah. They instantly were just like telling you, we like not forget about that second movie, but forget about that second movie because we are going right the way back to the OG. Because we've talked about A Nightmare on Elm Street 2 on this podcast before, and we think it gets a bit of a raw deal. Like, we think it's slightly better than some of the ratings and what some people say about it. But I think people were ready to go back to OG Nightmare on Elm Street here.
Wes Craven was back on board for this one. Like, yeah. I do like the second one. I do not like the as much slack and shit that it gets. Like, it wasn't that bad as a film. The whole story behind it was crazy, especially checking out that doc that's on Shudder. Yeah. The Scream Queen situation. It's fucking terrible. Like, honestly, everybody need an ass beat, to be honest. Yeah. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that, hey, on the third movie, I was fully in tune. Like, you can tell that, you know, people got back in formation and they was giving us the stories. And then the fact that Heather Langenkamp has came back and really shined on us.
Yeah, Heather was here. Heather Langenkamp was like, hello, I'm back. I have a degree. I still have that gray streak from the first movie.
I got on my chopper suit. I'm ready.
That's all the one thing that really bugs me about this film. Like, she comes back and she's like this expert in psychiatry, right? But this takes place like 6 years after the original. Yeah. I don't think you can get like a psychiatrist degree and education and become this renowned psychiatrist in 6 years.
Well, hold on now. It was the '80s and nineties, and it was a real crazy time. Like, I don't, wherever they were stationed up, anything was liable to happen. I grew up in nineties DC, so anything's liable.
But I'm thinking like, okay. She was what, in high school? She was in school. She was definitely in school. She was like in high school, 4 years in regular, like with the psychology. She would have to do 4 years off rip at a regular university.
And she came out of college with a job.
But yeah, but you still have to, you don't have a
maybe
license.
Maybe she had a dual license. Also, right? You know, privilege.
I'm so not maybe, sure. Got a job.
Also, it's the 90s. You really could have just went outside and got a
certification
job.
With certain hours of working.
Be depressed looking on the internet.
Yeah.
You could just walk into the house, to the building today. Hello, I would like a job.
They were hiring people like that. So wild. You just walked into places like, yeah, y'all hiring?
Maybe that's what happened to her. And, you know, she probably has some friends. I'm just feeling in the background. If they didn't have this as a story, they'd put me on the team. Maybe she had some friends in higher places. And when she came and pulled up on these kids, it was like, you know, girl, I have all the information and I'm taking like that.
Yeah, I know who's chasing you.
Well, that's true, because her dad is the sheriff, or was the sheriff.
Right, privilege. There we go.
There you go. That's it. We've just solved the mystery. Also, okay, so let's talk about some of the other characters then. Because like you say, obviously Nancy returns in this one, but this is a very different Nancy from the one we got in the original. Like, she is a completely different... In that first one, I felt like... it's very clear that she's also developed her acting skills a little bit, because her acting in the first one is a little bit shaky.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, I love it, and I love how... I love, like, how she acts in the first one. At certain points, though, it's a bit funny. Whereas here, it's very clear that she's worked on her craft, but Nancy is back, and she's a bit of a badass in this film.
Yeah, she really just like, honestly, it seems like Nancy had like, you know, she went through her quarter life crisis and really decided she was just going to shine on everybody. Because honestly, she's not that old. The first movie took place when she was like high school.
Yeah, like 17, 18 at the oldest.
Right. So she really out here, you know, filing her taxes and shit. And she's like, girl, I'm tired of Freddie beating my ass, beating all my friends' ass and still wreaking havoc. Like, it's not our fault. Our parents wild out. So how can we get rid of him?
Yeah, I love Nancy. This is definitely my favorite of all the it's my favorite of all the Nightmare movies anyway, but it's my favorite Nancy performance. So she definitely comes back, and with her leading this, being so much stronger, is partly of one of the reasons why I love this film. But I also want to talk about the kids. I want to talk about this group of kids. You've got these dream warriors. And they've got such an eclectic bunch. You know, you've got Kincaid, you've got Taryn and Kristen, Will and Philip, and Joey as well. And they're all here for a variety of different reasons. But I want to talk about the superpowers that they get, because a couple of these kids get ripped off with their superpowers.
Yes.
Because, like, Kincaid goes in and he has, like, super strength, and you're like, okay, that's a superpower that, you know, a lot of, like, young guys would potentially want. You know, Will has the superpower that he can stand up, which you think, okay, like, he's in a wheelchair. Yeah, I can imagine in a dream he'd want to stand up. He's also, like, the wizard master as well. And then you've got Kristen, who can do gymnastics, and you've got Taryn, who just looks like a badass.
Right.
Like, they get a bit ripped off.
Fucking a little ass pocket knife, and she got her ass beat. I was so mad because I love her line.
Taryn should have been
beautiful and bad. Yeah. They should get slapped. She has glitter on her tits. She looks great, and she's coming in here, and she's getting in a knife fight, which is definitely 80s, gives me 80s big city knife fight in the alley.
I'm not gonna lie, growing up I had a major crush on Taryn.
She's so cute.
She's fine. Did you see the glitter?
Did you see her outfit? Did you see her?
I saw it.
She looked good. She was turning her life around. Honestly, I felt like she should have had a gun. And I'm really not here to promote gun violence, but in this particular case, like, she should have just manifested one, because Freddie was wilding. You know, he was trying to get her back to relapse and all kinds of, and honestly, he succeeded. Damn. And, you know, Freddie was just wilding. I really feel like she should have shot him off in the feet. I don't know what that would have did in the dream world, but I was here to support her dreams.
Yeah, I love that mohawk she has as well. That's just so fucking crazy and wild and insane. I love it.
Big punk vibes. I love it. I do like that Kincaid was strong, but also it's annoying because, oh, he's strong and resilient. He came from the hood. He came from the streets.
Yeah, okay,
y'all didn't have to do that with him, but I guess it's the 80s, you know, whatever. The young man who all he could do was walk, like, his new power was because he was in a wheelchair, he could walk. He had wizard powers, but they didn't even help him.
Yeah, they did nothing.
Yeah, like
he had Dungeons & Dragons powers.
Now, and I love Dungeons & Dragons, but guess what? He cast a spell, he rolled a 3, and guess what?
His initiative was not working, baby.
Fuck the initiative. He did the attack. Yeah. We do play Dungeons & Dragons. I am a druid.
I'm usually a wizard or a sorcerer.
But yes, he rolled a dice and he got murdered. And I was like, damn, he didn't do nothing. And then some...
The worst part, well, the worst one for me is Joey, because his superpower is that he can talk.
Because, you know what, they could have did better with that.
He saves people with it, but it's, like, anticlimactic.
I mean, honestly, not to jump too far ahead, but I know I am moving ahead, and I know this is movie 3 and not movie 4. They do all this and they gas us up just to kill everybody off in the next movie. And you're looking at the screen like, what the hell? Like, you would like, yes, okay, so Kincaid's power, I really feel like they could have gave you Kincaid something else. Joey, I really wish they would have gave him something more than a voice. Like, these kids seem like they had so much, like, potential to be, like, they were badasses for the time.
Yeah.
Trust me, I fuck with this movie. But I really feel like they could have did more. Their ending could have been different.
Yeah.
Also, we wouldn't have a story.
Yeah,
even... But just do all this to just gas us up and just axe them off in a few minutes. Like, I love their powers, but girl, y'all wasn't invested in them either. Like
Joey, even if he had a voice, his voice could have been like, okay, he broke the mirror as they popped out the mirror.
He could have had a singing voice like Beyonce before we knew who Beyonce was.
Or he could have had a voice where, like, okay, the sound, like, makes him blow up or something. Like, okay, you broke some mirrors and then that's it. Nothing else fucking happens with your voice.
I honestly feel like they played, like, you know, that little lottery ball situation. You open up a thing, you pull the ball out, you get a number. That's what they did with their powers. Because when you look back at it, how any post of these things supposed to be Freddy ass? Honestly.
I'm bad. You got two little ass splits.
Ooh, I can A-Town stomp real hard. How's that supposed to be Freddy? Like, what?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't
know. No, I completely agree with you. Like, but let's talk about Freddy then, because he's the one. He's the star, right? He's the star of the entire franchise. Is Freddy Krueger? What did you think of him in this film specifically? Because obviously we got like a really different type of Freddy in Freddy's Revenge. Like, it maybe wasn't quite as intimidating as he was in the OG Elm Street. So, how did you feel about Freddy in this film?
I think we started to see a lot more of, like, pun-filled Freddy. Like, when he was given those one-liners, like, let's get high.
This is her big break!
Like,
haha, it's all the, prime like, time. Welcome to prime time, bitch.
Honestly, that was iconic.
That was great.
It was.
But, you know, he's funny, okay? Because the first movie, I didn't laugh. I don't know about people in the 80s, because I wasn't born then. But I'd watched it at a young age. But the first movie did not laugh. Second movie was interesting. Just still didn't laugh because he fucked up a barbecue in that second one. Wow.
Oh, that's the last
and this, wow. And the third one, it's like, okay, you got these. He had funny lines.
He had jokes.
And not just him, like some of the characters were saying jokes and had like funny quips and things.
It still was a little serious. As the series progressed, like it started to be more pun filled. But Freddie was still giving it scary, but he was also giving us kiki at the same time. Like, it was funny, it was interesting, it was a little bit more lighthearted, but still teetered on the scary. Yeah.
I think that's why it's my favorite. Like, it just balances it so perfectly. Like you say, he's still intimidating, he's still scary here, but he has those amazing one-liners. And yeah, I just think here is where they've gotten Freddie just perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, maybe that is a good mix.
What I do like, honestly, about these first three movies, and honestly, where all these movies take in place, these are a lot of, you get a clusterfuck or a handful of, like, people who are well-known actors and actresses. Like, you have fucking Lawrence Fishburne in a horror movie. Like, Larry Fishburne, like, for real, like, a legend. You have fucking Johnny Depp in the first movie. Mm-hmm. The 80s and 90s was such a crazy time. Like, that's all I gotta say again and again over again.
Yeah, I always, like, get shocked at just how young Lawrence Fishburne looks in this film. He must be just a child.
Listen, I know that he is paying taxes in this movie, and he looks like a grown-up to me, and I love him, and I love his face. I know he's lived life since then, but...
Yeah, he looked good. He looked good at that age.
Jesus.
Awesome. Okay, so you've kind of already, like, mentioned it, but let's talk about the kills then, because you've already mentioned Welcome to Primetime. So, what's your favorite kill, guys?
Okay, so, alright. For me, it's a tie, because one that freaks me out, and I still close my eyes when I watch it. Like, this morning, I closed my eyes when they kill off, what's his name? Is it Phil who sleepswalk? Yeah, it's Phil. And they pull the tendons out his fucking arms and legs, and Freddy's like a puppet master and is making him walk through the thing because it's so gross. Like, I can barely look at it, is what I'm saying. Like, it's been 20, 30 years and I still can't even look at it. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I've seen this movie quite a few times. Yeah. And he falls off the thing. And, you know, the fall isn't impressive, but the fact that the tendons are coming out and it looks very practical and fucking gross. My God, that one is... I like that kill.
Yeah, that shit was crazy.
I like the kill. Of course, the primetime one is great because her head goes through the TV. And there's a one-liner, and she's literally... Her feet are dangling off the floor, and her head is in the TV set, dog. Okay, it's between those two for me.
I think that one, the primetime situation, is one of my favorite kills, for real. Because, I mean, there were some in this movie, but a lot of them were just like, man, you died. I also like the let's get high, only because I like when Freddy goes, let's get high.
Yeah. And then her needle, like, holes are opening and shit.
I just like his little face, even though it's kind of a really dark situation, but I'm out of control, so that's pretty much where that goes. But the primetime bitch situation, that really fought with me, because I really felt bad for her. Like, she truly, the character truly felt like she was really, like, she had, like, you know, she's trying to be positive. I'm going to get up out of here. I'm not going to need this place no more. I'm about to be famous, girl. And everyone's like, shh.
Whatever, bitch.
You ain't about to get no job, bitch. Shut up. And, you know, Freddie came and beat her ass. And especially with the whole leading up to it with, like, Zsa Gabor. And she's got this popping outfit with these feathers. And it just cuts to this whole scene. And you realize very quickly that this character is asleep. And they don't know they're asleep. Because they're probably micro-sleeping. And it's sad. Larry Fishburne walk in the room and he's like, damn. And honestly, at that point, what I didn't like, I know this is not a part of your question, but about this whole scene, they really made Max's character, Larry Fishburne's character, Max, seemed like he was just oblivious to what was going on. You know goddamn well ain't nobody throwing their ass in the TV. You know something is wrong with her.
Come on, bro.
Yeah.
I want that job. I don't like that they made him seem like he, you know, was just really going with what the authority was saying. Like, he didn't have a brain of his own, but that's just me.
Yeah, so they seemed to do that a little bit as the movie went on. Like, at the beginning, I very much felt like Max, you know, he was on the side of the kids, you know, and he was, like, trying to help them out where he could. And then once it got later in the film, he just sort of became this character who just followed whatever Sim said. And yeah, it did let him down a little bit as the film goes on. But speaking about the kills, obviously we talked a little bit before we started recording. Anyone who's listened to our top five kills / deaths in a horror film will know that the Welcome to Primetime bitch kill was my number three kill of all time in horror. So I just love that kill. I think it was my third pick. I think it came third. So I fucking love that kill. But I completely agree, Philip's kill with the tendons and the veins and things like that is just so grossed out. It really makes me wince. It's just horrible. I do like the let's get high kill as well. I like the fact that her like needle holes are like little suckling mouths. And it's just gross and disgusting. So yeah, there's a number of really, really cool kills in this film. Okay, so we were talking about the plot of the film, and I was talking about the first two and how... You know, you get that little sort of classic at the beginning of a horror movie where everything's nice and everything's okay, and we never get that here. So for me, the whole tone of this film is completely different from the two that we've gotten before it, straight from the beginning.
You know what? I can agree with that because, of course, the first one is like, oh, Nancy's is having a good time. She's cool with her homegirl. She's in here, whatever. The second one, the guy is hanging out. He's around friends and doing stuff. You see him in school. This one starts off with the girl is... fucking eating coffee and drinking Diet Coke.
Yeah,
trying not to sleep. She doesn't slice her own wrist, but Freddie makes her pretty much slice her own wrist. And she's in a hospital. Yeah, it's dark from the start. We're already in peril. Like, Freddie's already here. No one's safe from literally the opening scene.
Yeah.
She eats the coffee. Who eats coffee? Is that even effective?
She's not good, bro. We already know that from the jump. First of all, she's making a paper mache situation
of
somebody else's house. She don't even live there.
You know, yeah, you're right. Like, the tone is already like, wow, we're about to get dark. Great. Welcome. Yeah,
and not only that as well, like, her mother is just so horrendous. Like, she seems so mean. She's taking random men home, like... She doesn't seem to care about her daughter that much. When her daughter eventually goes into the mental institution, she's like, oh, she's just overreacting. You know, she specializes in weirdness or whatever it is. Like, she just doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, I feel like part of that is the addiction, because I feel like Nancy's mom, they show that she has, like, liquor bottles in the closet.
Yeah, she wasn't.
There's liquor bottles just stashed around the fucking... Who the fuck had liquor bottles in your linen closet?
She also was really focused on getting a man.
She was.
It's very apparent that she, you know, obviously, I feel like to a certain degree she cared about her child, but a lot of her, the focuses that they presented in the movie, like, she was focused on, you know, that bottle. She was trying to get these dates with these men. Like, she really was trying to have her child just sit off in the shadows while she was trying to secure the bag.
Yeah.
So one of the other things I wanted to talk about in the movie that we've not really covered yet is the nun. We get this, like, mysterious nun character. I think she's called Sister, is it Mary Helena or something like that in this film? This little sort of plot device seemed very forced to me. Like, why did this need to be in here at all? I get that it was a plot device to let them know that how to kill, and I'm using the inverted commas here, how to kill Freddy, but it just seemed completely out of place with the rest of the film.
I agree with you. I feel like it was definitely forced down our throats. Doesn't they try to, like, bits and pieces bring it back in further stories afterwards? And honestly, no shade to all the people involved. I really just feel like they was trying to pull some shit out the air, but in trying to make it work. I mean, it is what it is. I didn't completely hate it, although it was forced. But ultimately, what was the point when Freddy just gonna pull back up in the next movie anyways?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Like, it doesn't really have any sort of payoff. It has a payoff in terms of the franchise. It has its short-term payoff here, because we think that, or we're led to believe that that's how they killed Freddy. But we, mm-hmm. like, obviously now we know that there's another, four or five films. So,
right.
We know now. But even at the time, I don't think this movie was ever supposed to turn into, a big franchise or anything like that.
No.
But even at that time, they must have known what they had on their hands.
Yeah, because Freddy was, a thing. Have you seen the Never Sleep Again documentary?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, okay, shout out to you. And so, yeah, outside of that and all the random interviews that I've seen, obviously, I don't know these people individually, but I agree with you. It kind of just seemed like they were like, okay, so this thing did a thing, and then it kind of derailed and got so big where it just kind of, trying to rein it in, and I don't know. It just seemed like such a journey. We're going to still, I don't know if you're on the same page as us, but I like to pretend the most recent movie never happened.
Okay, yeah. It was kind of it was kind of gross, kind of icky.
In terms of franchises, the most recent, the remake, The Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah, I wish that thing never happened. I feel bad for Jackie Earl Haley, who obviously plays Freddy Krueger in the remake. I don't think he was particularly bad. They obviously tried to take Freddy Krueger in a different direction to the rest of the franchise, and I think he did a really good job, but I think he was just let down with a terrible script, with really bad effects, and yeah, there's nothing memorable in that film at all.
Yeah, I would have honestly, I know this is not about that, but just for 2 seconds, I honestly would have like to see either a different take on the origin story or an expansion type situation. Obviously there's only so much you can do. And that's just me just being me showing up, especially with the last movie scene was Freddy versus Jason. So
I think when you do a remake or a reboot or anything like that so much further down the line, you have to bring something new and different to the table. And you think about things like the 2018 Halloween, it completely did away with all the fluff that we had gotten in all those sequels, and it took it, stripped it right back to basics. And that's what people have been wanting from the Halloween franchise for so long, to get it back to that sort of quality of film. And that's why I think that film was a big success. But the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, it tried to take it in a more serious direction, but then they obviously changed Freddy Krueger to be a child molester instead of a child killer, which I don't think sat well with a lot of people, and it just didn't in the end bring anything new to the storyline, didn't bring anything new to the franchise. And yeah, I quite happily would never watch that film again.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Because here's the real thing. Freddy was always who he was from day one. Just the big difference from the previous movies and the present day one is no one was flat out saying, this man is not only a murderer of children, he is a sexual assault. He's a fucking pedophile. He's wild. And I did in the new movie how they were very upfront with that versus it was the 80s. It's a weird time. Obviously this is some things that we know that's happening, but to be very direct about that in a mainstream movie was what's going on? So I do like that, but I didn't like how they tried to make me empathize with him.
I really didn't like how at times they almost tried to make you be was he good or wasn't he good, or was he bad or wasn't he bad? And they sort of played around with it. Well, he might actually have not been this character that we've thought that Freddy Krueger has been since 1981, So I didn't like that either.
No. But yeah, either or.
Okay, so is there anything else you guys want to talk about this film? We've covered quite a lot, really, in a short space of time, but is there anything that I've missed that you guys would like to talk about?
Dream Warriors, that girl. Kincaid should have got a better, more shine.
Yeah, I hated his outfits.
I wish they, even though it's more so into the next film, I honestly wish they didn't kill off all the characters, but I know it was a director change and other shit, but... This movie was fire. This is very entertaining for a sequel, and we know sequels, so how much excitement do you have when a sequel comes out? You already in your chest feel some sort of dread, this shit might be shaky. But this is good.
Yeah, and not only that, the effects, the practical effects. I'm a person who, I don't really fuck with CG. If you can't afford to do it practically, I'd rather you keep it off screen or kind of give me shadow or sound. you know, versus giving me some really poorly made CG blood or CG anything, because it looks bad. And especially with older movies, it's not going to age well. No, they had like her needle holes in her arm were opening and closing. Like, they did that. Like, that's some latex going on over there. Like, the puppet in the beginning that eats fucking Kristen, and Nancy tries to pull her away by stabbing it in the eye. Like, that fucking big ass fucking Freddy puppet that's a worm. Good. It looks like a tremor, but it's not a tremor. It's just, I'm like, wow, what the fuck? When he pops up on the prime time, it's like his head is coming out of the TV and like latex, like, you know, kind of air vacuums around his head a little bit. Everything looks tangible.
You know what?
And real.
Shout out to Robert Englund. I have never met this man in my entire life, and hopefully, you know, before the curtains come down, I'm able to like cross paths with him. That would be fire. I don't know how Rona's going to play into that. But this man, like, he really embodied the fuck out of his character to the point that I don't want to see anyone else play Freddy Krueger. Like, I have no interest in seeing anyone else play this character. I don't care how good the person is. And it's nothing for them. It's just, when I think of Freddy, I think of Robert Englund.
Yeah, it's very much a case of, like, this is just perfect casting. If for those who follow us on Twitter, they'll know that every day or every other day we put out questions on Twitter. And a while back, I put out a question, like, if Robert Englund wasn't to return, who would people want to see play Freddy Krueger? And we got, like, a few different answers here and there. You know, we got a couple of people who says, you know, give Jackie O'Haley another try. But really, people just want Robert Englund because he's Freddy Krueger. And, like, you know, it's like Bruce Campbell is Ash and, you know, Sigourney Weaver is Ripley. Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. And it takes nothing away from anyone else that plays the role. It's just like, no one is going to give you these one-liners.
Yeah.
Like, Robert, even in other roles he plays, like random obscure roles, and that's not a takeaway from him and his greatness, but you still feel like, damn, is Freddy here? Like, it's just like he, even if he's turning it off, you can still see it. Like, I don't know. I'm tripping. It's just me.
No, I completely agree with you. Like, it's Freddy, really. It's Freddy all the way. In the remake, I didn't think that Jackie O'Haley did a particularly bad job at Freddy. He was let down by everything else. So I think if the movie was better, then that might have came across better. But Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger for me. But anything else, or are you happy to move on?
Oh, we're happy
to
move on.
Okay, so let's talk about some trivia.
Movie trivia.
So, this movie had a budget of $4.5 million, and in its initial run grossed $44.7 million. So, it was quite a financial success for 1987 in its initial run. But obviously, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise just blew up, and who knows, over the course of the past 30-odd years, how much money this movie's actually made. It is the third highest grossing Nightmare on Elm Street movie of all time, behind Freddy vs. Jason and the sequel to this one, Dream Master. So it made more money than the first two movies as well.
Holy shit.
Well, you know, it makes sense.
I like both. I don't know if you noticed this, but throughout the film, Kristen and Taryn, at various points in the film, they can be seen wearing Dokken t-shirts.
No, I didn't see that.
So I think it's in the opening scene. I think you can see a Dokken. I don't know if she's wearing it or if it's maybe on the back of her chair or whatever, but you can see a Dokken t-shirt. And Taryn, at one point in the film, I think it's when you're first introduced to her, is also wearing a Dokken t-shirt.
No, I'm about to go back and run that back now that you've pointed this out.
Well, let's.
I feel like I'm playing World's
World.
I'm excited.
The role of Kristen was originally offered to Winona Ryder.
I did not know that. Now, I did know, of course, for those who have obviously kept along with the story, Patricia Arquette plays it in the first movie. There's a different actress in the second movie, but I did not know Winona was pulling up first. That would have been interesting.
So they decided to not go with her because they thought she was too young at the time. I think she was just maybe a few years... because this is obviously like the year before Beetlejuice came out, and she was pretty young then. I think Patricia Arquette was 19 at the time that this came out, and I think Winona Ryder was about 15 or 16.
Oh, girl, yeah, no.
Yeah, and like we've already discussed as well, this was originally meant to be the final film of the franchise, and that final scene where the light goes on in the papier-mâché house. So we're obviously all thinking that that's the sign that Freddy's still alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the original storyboards, that was originally meant to signify that Nancy was protecting everyone's dreams.
You can't see my face, but I literally just peered over my glass like, girl, get the hell out of my face.
I thought Freddy was like, bitch, I'm still here, just like in, spoiler alert, Freddy versus Jason, where Jason pulls his head out and, okay, it's Freddy's head, but Freddy winking at your ass. Bitch, I'm still here.
No, that's what I meant to. That's what I took it as well. But apparently not in the original storyboards. But I'm glad they didn't go with that.
Yeah, and I could see Wes Craven being fed up because, as from that documentary that we saw, Wes Craven was kind of just like, "Girl, let's just move on and find a whole nother thing." But which is interesting. Came back and did Wes Craven's New Nightmare, but you know,
which I love.
Whole other conversation for a whole nother day.
Yeah. So we have, obviously, on this podcast, we have a written critic who we challenge to write up reviews of certain movies, and then we'll post them across our social media. So we asked Melissa to write us a review about A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors. I'm just going to a couple of the points that she made and then give her rating for it. And then if you want to go and read that full review, it's on our Twitter and it's on our Instagram. So please do go check that out. But basically, the long and short of it from her is she thinks this has got a really great cast, really interesting characters. It's a compelling plot with genuine scares and good comedy and some spectacular death scenes. And she rated this movie as 7 out of 10. But
you know, okay.
Okay, I would have gave it an 8, but you know, yes, girl, I support you.
Well, let's get into our ratings then.
Final thoughts.
So, we'll start off with the critics, like we normally do. IMDb scored this movie as 6.6 out of 10. Metacritic scoring it at just 49. The Rotten Tomatoes critics scored it at 74% fresh, with the Rotten Tomatoes audience scoring it at 68%. So, what would out of 10 then, what would you guys give A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors?
So, first of all, that 6 or the 49 is bullshit. Definitely giving it a 7 at minimum. Okay. I'm giving it a 7 because the concept was fucking dope. The special effects were dope. The kills were cool. The characters are cool. They're fucking... Look, I'm beautiful and bad, bitch. Like, yeah. Yes. I fucked with it. And then they brought Heather Langenkamp back. Yes, they brought her back. It was pretty fucking cool. He brought her dad back, although he got murdered.
Yeah.
Because, you know, fuck him anyway. He was drinking and trying to hide. Anyway, yeah. But, you know, a 7, maybe a 7.3. I'll give it that. 7.3. It's a good movie. I'll watch it again. Definitely rewatchable.
I would give it an 8.5. And even with this being in one of my favorite movies of all time, like, I'm not gonna be like, oh my god, it was a 10 out of 10 movie. No, I'm gonna be realistic. Like, this shit was crazy. But a 6? Like, do we watch the same movie? Like I said, how often do you see a sequel that is compelling? Especially, this is the third movie. This is not the second. However you may have felt about the second, the third movie came back and snatched all its edges. Like, it gave you story. Freddy came back with the one-liners. I feel like it essentially probably brought the franchise back up because I obviously wasn't alive during when movie 2 came out and barely, I don't know, more than a fucking zygote when movie 3 came out. But it gave you what you needed. Like, I can't name a franchise where multiple movies truly enthralled me more than just I need to know how the story ends. It was a good movie.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. Like, if you look at other franchises, how often does the third movie really like look at Halloween 3.
Well, okay.
Like, yeah, that movie was total shit. But here in A Nightmare on Elm Street, you've got Dream Warriors. And like you say, I completely agree with you. I think this is the movie that really blew up the franchise. It's got all those great things that we've talked about. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, but like you, I know that this film does have certain issues. There are certain things that they could have done a little bit better. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think when we did the original Nightmare on Elm Street, we gave it a 7.5. And then we did Freddy's Revenge, and I think that got a 5.5. I can't really remember. But I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. So, we on this podcast, we combine all of our scores with the critic scores and give it an average score. So A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 has gotten an average score of 6.7 out of 10, and it puts it in 27th place in the list of movies that we have covered on the show, and it has the same rating as 28 Weeks Later.
Wow.
Okay, well, wow, okay, wow, I did enjoy
another movie I fucked with.
It was fun.
Woo!
So okay. It's very much in the middle, but the critics have obviously dragged it down a little bit, but hey, at least it's not down there at the bottom.
They are hating a little bit. They're too
pretentious
for me. I can't do it.
Awesome. So that's it then. That's it, guys. That's all we've got time for in this week's show. I want to thank you two for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute honor, and I've had an absolute blast having you guys on.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having us. We're so happy.
Do you want to just remind the listeners where they can find you guys and where they can find the Girl That's Scary podcast?
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at the same handle, Girl That's Scary. We also have a website, Girl That's Scary, basically www.girlthatscary.com. Pull up on us. We're here. We're active. We love hearing new things. We love interacting and meeting new people to a certain extent. We love y'all. We love it.
Awesome. So don't forget, guys, you can find this podcast on Twitter at Screams Behind, and it's Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Behind the Screams Podcast. Next week, I am so excited for next week because we're talking about a modern film, and it's one of my favorites at the moment. We're talking about Terrifier.
Oh, yes.
I take it you're a fan then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I cannot wait to talk about it because I've been loving this movie ever since it came out. I cannot wait for Terrifier 2, but I don't want to get into it too much. You'll have to wait till next week's show to listen to that. But once again, I want to thank you guys for coming on. I want to thank the listeners for downloading this episode. Go rate and review us on iTunes. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you'll join us next time on Behind the Screams.